I think most of us can think back to a time in our careers, or if you're still working, when you took something on that was new and it was exciting and terrifying at the same moment. And then reflecting back on that experience and saying, as tough and challenging as it was, I learned a lot, and you know what? I made it through. So in today's episode, Joyce interviews me about my experience in the Southeast, leading the HR and operation efforts for our introduction into a brand new market. So let's get right to it. Come on in, grab a snack, welcome.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello, Joyce. Good morning.
I always wait for you to go, hello, Joycey, which is my childhood friends.
It's going to happen when you least expect it. It'll be happening.
Do you remember how kids, I don't know, see, I grew up in a blue collar block, and they would come to my door and go, Joycey, can you come out and play? Anyway, I was thinking today about hard work. Hmm. And the pleasure of hard work, and how in some large groups that we've run, if you ask, what was the pinnacle or what was a peak moment in your career? And they always pull out just disasters that they had to manage.
There's some truth to that, a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, the roof blew off, but we figured out, you know, we wove palm leaves and made a new roof. The parking lot turned to absolute mud, so we nailed plywood on it, and all the customers were getting flat tires. But many were natural, you know, like a hurricane or an act of nature that takes really pulling together, especially in the food industry, to save product that you can and to keep the stores open and to help your customers. So interestingly enough, people said, we love hard times that shows our competence and shows us pulling together. So thinking of that, I was thinking, that's kind of large company blues. But then I'm thinking when you actually and a colleague went from New England down to the Southeast to open Hannaford stores, correct? Or you didn't know what they were going to.
Yeah, no, I think we determined pretty quick on, well, we couldn't use the name Shop and Save, which all of our Northeast stores were called at the time. So we had to come up with a new name, and Hannaford at the end of the day, thank God, look where that name has gone, prevailed. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a radical departure from the norm, because most supermarket companies, acquisitions were happening, but they weren't the flavor of the day necessarily back then. So supermarkets typically spread out from their existing territories. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go from New Hampshire into Northern Massachusetts or Vermont into Northern New York State.
Yeah, but you don't leap.
You don't leap. This was what we referred to as a discontinuous leap, de novo. Yeah, I learned a new word back in 1994 that I didn't even know existed.
We're going to go all over the place today, because I want to be sure we share a very innovative approach that we took down there for opening stores. But first, it was two of you who went down there and opened a little bogus office.
Actually, to be fair, we had three of us. There was a fellow that was a real estate guy looking for locations. Okay. And so it was myself, Rick, and
Anicetti.
Me. Yeah, for the better part of a year. And
so what did you do? You're talking about how a large company has to do startup behavior.
It's, you know, it was both exhilarating and terrifying.
That sounds great.
Hannaford, the one thing I appreciated and learned during my time there is we were buttoned up. We had a plan. We had a methodology. We had this ploddingly methodical, we used to say that proudly, way of addressing problems, opening stores, taking care of troubled markets where we weren't performing well. And I remember like it was yesterday where we had bought this small independent group of stores, Wilson's in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
And we did our introduction. And then Rick and I went back to our hotel room because we didn't have an apartment. And we're sitting there with all these boxes around us that we had brought down with us. And he looked at me and I looked at him and he said, "What do we do now?" And he so meant it because, you know, we knew that 18 months later or 14 months later, we were going to open a store. But it's like we didn't have that ploddingly methodical step-by-step approach. So, yeah, it was much like being an entrepreneur. And I'm serious. It was both exhilarating and terrifying. And not to get to the punchline, I think what helped us get through is we had this thing called the mothership, Hannaford, back in New England, that was very helpful and supportive. I mean, they threw every resource that we needed, and it would have been very isolating if we didn't have. I mean, we used to complain, "Oh, someone's coming down from the north," but at the end of the day, they own every bit of success that we had in opening up those four markets.
Wow,
which that's four markets. That's Charlotte and Raleigh, North Carolina, Virginia Beach, and Richmond, and then Southern North Carolina, the Wilmington area. So
how many stores?
Oh my gosh. I think when we were done, meaning before we sold the company, God, I can't remember. 30 something, maybe 40
yeah.
something stores.
Yeah.
I mean, we had reached what I would call critical mass.
What I'm thinking at it from an OD point of view for a moment, because I'm thinking of Rick at retail and also the barn raising.
The barn raisings.
I had always been puzzled about how you could run a store and not periodically close the store and bring everybody together to talk. I still feel that. I don't care if it's a 2-hour thing or what it costs, at least every year, everybody together to talk about what's great and what isn't. Anyhow, you and I designed what was called the barn raising.
Yep.
And had every single associate that was going to work in any of those, in the store, particular store, come to a day-long meeting.
Yep. Which, and, folks, for retail people to come in and sit on somewhat slightly uncomfortable chairs for a day is like, nah, this ain't happening. So it was pretty radical.
Right. And we had pretty sullen people, slinked down in their chairs looking at us. And I wish I could remember how we opened it. I know it was fun and it was the leadership voices. But
yeah.
I do remember that we did quite a bit of role play.
Yes.
With serving customers and then having the group rate was the solution good or not. Anyhow, it was radical for the time. And it also included a super, super, super good lunch.
We're talking
barbecue.
So let me give some context, because I think this was just an incredibly creative OD intervention to launch an expansion. And our challenge was, in normal circumstances, your employees that you're hiring have a lot of examples of how you do it. They have a store right down the block, the next town. They go into our stores up north and they can see, oh, this is how a cashier does this. This is how a produce manager does this. We had none of that. In Fayetteville, New Hampshire, our closest store was some 900 miles away. So our challenge was, how do we create a presence?
Not Fayetteville, New Hampshire.
Pardon?
Not Fayetteville, New Hampshire, right?
No, I'm saying we were in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Right,
and
got it.
Our closest store was in Hampton, New Hampshire. So what I'm saying is everyone we hired had no picture in their mind of what we were and how we wanted to be. And to me, that was the birth of this one-day event that we're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember. I know that there was something pretty powerful coming from the leadership group itself that kicked off the meeting. And that was very revealing of who you were and how you worked and where. And I really don't remember it, other than it was a stunning commitment to customer and associates.
Yeah, yeah. We
And
referred to it as a customer focused attitude, meaning we wanted, you know, it was about our customer. And guess what? Everyone in this room, you are on the front line of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they came with things of tough customer moments and had people role play solving them and had the team vote, yes, that was a good solution. No, it wasn't. We had a little meter that we used. But anyway, the other thing later that I really designed from positive inquiry was to have the CEO, Rick at Retail, go around to the stores and catch people doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead, Joyce.
Well, and I'm thinking how, yes, you talked about the support of the Northeast coming down with talent and stuff.
Yeah.
And you and I actually got in a fight once because you had too much talent coming down. You had store managers were being overwhelmed with advice and therefore not able to stand on their own 2 feet. And Hannaford, when it came down from the Northeast, was a little arrogant.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. But I remember there was a moment, and it comes with teenagers or anything, where these stores had to do it on their own or not. The help that was coming was almost too much.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, there's this natural tension whenever you create kind of two separate communities within an organization, particularly if you're on the front line and you're in the new market and you're in a totally different, it's like being on a different planet competitively, you know, and so you have people come down, with their Northeast mindset.
Right.
Well, I know what we have to do here. We need to X, Y, Z. And so there's that natural friction of good intentions, but perhaps advice that's off the mark. You know, and we wanted to do something very different than what we had in the Northeast. Let me explain.
Yeah.
And I think once again, this reinforces the idea of having a barn raising. We're building this together. We're taking this structure that we're creating that we're going to live in, and we're going to have a powerful presence for our customer. We're building this together. And well, I was just going to give you one small example that I think you'll remember, and it was part of the role plan. We basically said was, if we have a customer focused attitude, we always give the customer the benefit of the doubt. So that's number one. Someone returns a chicken. It may not look like a chicken that we sold, but they're getting a refund if they said it was no good. So that was number one. We're going to trust the customer. Receipt, we don't need a receipt. We trust that when they come in the store, because we have a focused attitude, that they're going to get what they want. The second radical thing, and this is where people got really antsy in their seats, we told a cashier, a bagger, that they are empowered to make that decision. That was radical.
Yep.
You know, so that means a bagger could come over to the store manager and say, hey, I'm going to get Mrs. Smith a new $18 ham because she said this ham that she bought here wasn't good. That was radical. And that's where that barn raising, I thought was so creative and critical, you know, to.
Didn't we? I know that it's done commonly now, and maybe it was then too, but I know we instituted the huddles.
Yes.
Which was to create connectivity and purpose each day. Tell me,
yes.
I forget.
Well, you know, it's so if I were to think about the barn raising, one day event, celebratory, a orientation, but kind of a creating our culture day one, we knew that that wasn't by itself going to be sustaining. And so we wanted to have demonstrations that what you experienced at that one day barn raising we're going to have the same thing in a different context called a huddle, where, and folks, this is kind of crazy. Once again, back then, they're kind of the common now in a lot of retailers, is we would literally shut down the store. So every meat cutter would come up front, produce clerk would come up front, dairy, and we would lead a conversation about relevant information about the day, people sharing points of pride. If there was a new employee there that they got introduced, it was a 15 minute, no more than daily touch point, which the managers that did it well, it was magic. And some of our And some of our stores where it became kind of a perfunctory, we got to do, you might guess it was dry as can be and not effective.
Yeah, and probably made fun of and moaned and groaned.
So sincerity and purpose and staying tied to why you're doing something as opposed to, oh, I got to do a huddle. Hey, let me throw you a pin.
I have another question. It didn't all go well for a while. You had built in, you know, your budget and expected losses and all that. How did you manage discouragement or scare both your own and others? And was there that much? Because I want to end with that quote from Hugh Farrington, who was the CEO of Hannaford at that time. But how did you manage that tension? Your jobs were on the line.
Oh, gosh, Joyce. If I think about our 2 year, 3 year period after opening, we had some real high points, but oh my God, we had some real low points where we didn't deliver on the promise. And, you know, I don't know how we got through, but I'll share one that will make a couple of our listeners grimace. We were fortunate enough to have Hugh Farrington come down within, I'd say, 2 or 3 months of opening that Fayetteville, North Carolina store we were talking about. My boss, Rick, had just had surgery on the shoulder and had just gotten out of the hospital. And both of them visited the Fayetteville store. Now, we all know in retail, when we got the CEO coming, you want to look like grand opening good. I wasn't there, but evidently they walked into a store that had its pants around its proverbial ankles. It was a disaster. You know, we used to call them, we used to say, you know, stop, drop, and roll because you've got a fire going on here. And so Hugh and Rick, my understanding was we're loading the produce case, we're putting meat out. And so that, I mean, talk about seeing you at your worst. So the gritty reality is we had some real low points. And I honestly.
Did they become famous? Did that event where they were doing the work get around?
Oh, it became legendary. Yeah. I mean, and because the reason I was mentioning Rick's surgery, he was working so hard that he started bleeding through his red shirt.
That's kind of appropriate.
Well, I'm laughing now, but so we had great openings and we had some really good successes. But, you know, we had our struggles. And I think in any kind of de novo, first time big experience, you're going to have those high points and low points.
Yeah. And quite and honestly, you certainly were being closely watched.
Yes, I like how you put
it. What was sustaining or what kept you from freaking? And I think of Hugh's quote when I ask that, and maybe how are we doing on time?
We're doing great. You know, like I did before, it'll probably take me a half an hour to find that quote, but I think at the bottom, at the end of the day, there was a belief that we would prevail. A profound sense of facing the gritty reality of what today was. So whether it be financial losses, whether it be operational deficiencies, inability to hire people, we had this kind of confidence that at the end of the day, it was going to be all right.
And you could borrow from the history of Hannaford where things got done.
Yeah, no doubt. And
I mean, you know, when you said, was it proddingly methodical or whatever, that's what Wall Street liked about Hannaford.
Yeah, well, and quite honestly, while the story that I shared about Rick and Hugh may have made us feel isolated, we knew we had the full-throated support of not only the leadership of the Northeast, but associates, and we consider ourselves fortunate. So you asked about a quote, and I was cleaning out some drawers and found the 1996 annual report from Hannaford Brothers Company. And the quote is from Hugh, and to me, it captures the essence, not only of who we were and probably are today, but also why we were able to deal with the challenges of being in the Southeast. And I'll read the quote. "Mark of a great company is that it makes things happen. We have great resourcefulness and creativity. We know we can make it work." And you said when I read this before we went on that, boy, what a kind of understated, powerful statement.
No drama.
No drama.
Yes, we're going to get it done.
Now, and implied is, and we are a great company. This is who we are. This is what we believe.
Yes.
And I would argue that if 10 other companies tried to do what we did in the Southeast, 9 of those 10 would fail miserably every time. And I know that sounds like hubris, but I really believe. And the importance of what Hugh said in his comments. You think of those two words: creativity, resourcefulness. Creativity, fundraising, I mean, and taking
and make
risks.
Make things happen.
And yes, and pull it off. Mm-hmm. And the second is resourcefulness. When I said all hands on deck, we got what we needed given the challenges, even though it probably came at some loss for the Northeast. But I'll tell you the one thing. If I look back and look at that whole period of time, and I'd also include our expansion into New York. This is, I think, important for companies today. Every one of those major market changes accelerated the growth of our associates and created future leaders, the likes of which I don't think we'd ever seen.
Right.
In all that grit and pain and, you're like, it becomes kind of a real factory of generating our future leaders.
And I started, I think, by talking about people loved hard work, a crisis or a challenge when asked for their peak experience.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of excitement and demand. And we can go into this another time. Is do we have that now?
Great question. I think that is a topic, and I'd like to bring one of our former colleagues, in to talk about that.
Wonderful.
So I'd like to close kind of where I started, because it shows about the evolution of life and of organizations and work. Not everyone may know this, but we ultimately, Hannaford sold our company to Delhaize, which was the parent company of Food Lion. And the FTC at the time, as a condition of the sale going through, we had to sell stores wherever there was overlap. So everything that we built and worked so hard for in Hannaford Southeast ultimately either closed, but most of the stores went to our competition. So while Rick and I started out in rooms saying, what do we do now? I'll never forget this. I was in our corporate offices in Raleigh. We had sold the stores. Everyone who had worked in the stores went to work for the competition. All of our corporate associates in the Southeast had left the company. And there was just myself and Deb Shulu in that office. And I remember looking at one another and said, I guess we're going to lock the door and leave, but I'm not sure who we give the key to. So it was, for me, the life cycle to be there at the very beginning and then closing the door and locking it on the way out. It was excruciating, but it's so fitting thinking back.
Boy, I'm really sorry about that abrupt ending. Hit that button a little bit too quick. I don't like to think of this as a disclaimer, just coming clean, that these events that Joyce and I talked about today took place some 25 to 28 years ago. And I mentioned a few people by name. If for some reason I didn't get it exactly right in terms of the timing, who was there, who wasn't there, please accept my apology. And thank you for listening. And until the next time, be well and be safe.